Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today from the venue of the National Tribal Health Conference. We're in Phoenix, Arizona. It is September 2025, and we are just enthusiastic about all the great people that we're meeting, those who are so willing to share with our listening audience. One of those individuals sitting right across from me in our virtual studio, Laura Brooks. Laura, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Laura, your name is not a strange name for many of our listeners who are in Oklahoma. You are with the Osage Nation. You're a program manager in an area that is really of critical need. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Absolutely. So I am currently the Osage Nation Counseling Center Program Manager. We have a new multi-million dollar campus that has been open just under a year. It'll be a year September 30th. Whenever we built this campus, it was built to encompass several new areas that we did not have and to rebuild and expand on the areas that we have already had. The Osage Nation has had a residential treatment program greater than 25 years.
Wow.
However, the campuses have been split over the years, men's and women's. September of 2024, we were able to move into our new campus, which houses our outpatient counseling. So if you were to come in just for a regular family session, an individual session, you would go to that building, as well as administration there. But on the other side is our primary residential treatment program. Lyric Brooks is actually the program manager for that. We house 12 men, 12 women in each house. It is a home setting, so it's not an institutional-looking setting. It is a 90-day program. It is culturally based. We also have a sweat ceremony. We have a sweat lodge. There are so many different facets to recovery. It's not just get in the program and you recover tomorrow. It is coping skills. It's healing. When you're in active addiction, you don't know that you have a toothache. You don't know that your back hurts. You don't know that you're diabetic. And so when you enter our program, you get a facet of every avenue that when you're in active addiction isn't the priority on your list. So when you come in, those are priorities on our list for you to be healthy. It is mentally, it is physically, it is medically. And so that's what we are here for. That's the main purpose. We want you to go out. We want you to be confident in your recovery and the skills that you have learned while you're in our program. And we want you to come back in a year with your sobriety and say, hey, I want to work for you.
Wow. Okay.
And that's what we want. We have a lot of employees that are in recovery themselves. We recover out loud. And so they are very, very important. I think that they're the glue. A peer recovery support specialist, if you have a client that wakes up and they say, I feel like I want to drink today, I feel like I want to use today, then we have that peer recovery support specialist that says, I've been there.
Right.
I have done that. This is how I transition those thoughts. This is what worked for me. Let's figure out what will work for you.
I love what you're doing there. I've not been to the facility, but you're getting me excited to come back and visit Oklahoma. We spent better part of a decade living in that beautiful part of the country. But I'll tell you, one of the things that I've heard here, I'm just going to let you know, Laura, I actually ran into a Native woman from Oklahoma. I don't think she'd heard of your program till she was here. And she was very enthusiastic because she heard something about an interesting pricing structure. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
That is correct. Our people are important to us. That's what we're there for. If you have a CDIB card or a tribal enrollment card and meet the admission criteria, when you come to us, if you have insurance, we'll certainly file your insurance. If you do not have insurance, we will try to get you enrolled in insurance. If you do not have, and neither one of those fit that category, you still are not going to walk out with a cost. You are there.
Wow.
The cost to us the benefit for us is for us to help our people. Mm. That's what we're there for. We have large graduations. Mm-hmm. You know, some of our clients, we get every walk of life. Again, addiction is, it does not discriminate.
That's right.
Some may have never had a graduation. When they graduate from our program, they have a big graduation.
Mm.
It is a ceremony in and of itself. They pass a coin around. Everybody that's in the program, the directors, the clinicians, and all of the other clients that are there, they give those words of encouragement to that graduating client.
So is it correct, as you mentioned, any given point in time, you've got roughly 24 people in the program?
Correct. We do have the capacity of 12 men and 12 women. Currently, we do not have a waiting list, and we don't have a block schedule. So we take as needed. A block schedule has worked for some.
Mm-hmm.
To us, if you are working on a block schedule, that means for 6 weeks, you have a waiting list, and mm-hmm. these are who you bring in 6 weeks, but you don't bring anybody else in for those 3 months.
Right.
We don't want to turn anyone away. And so if we have five that come in this week, in 3 months, when they graduate, we're going to be down five.
Okay.
Right? Because you brought five in at the same time, five graduated at the same time. I do want to touch on, once they graduate, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm. Tell us.
5 months ago, we implemented for the first time with Osage Nation Counseling Center and Behavioral Health a transitional living facility. So that's an additional 120 days to stay on that sobriety journey. The way I like to look at it, and I like to explain it, when you come into primary residential treatment, you may have just come from detox.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have used a substance 3 to 5 days prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not cleansed of that. You may still feel the effects of that. When you come to us, you're spending that first 30 days of that adjustment period. The mind is settling down. The anxiety may be taking over because you're not used to feeling that.
Mm.
Again, the medical issues. Dietary is huge. We have healthy when they leave. We have not healthy when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the primary residential treatment as that 90 days of learning the coping skills, of resetting with that structure. If you opt to go to the transitional living, once you have completed that program, that is not the residential treatment structure. That's the freedom. You go to work. You cook for yourself. You maintain your home. You maintain your living space. You still attend meetings. You still have program requirements. However, in the end of that, that is your last step before you get out into the community.
So these individuals in the transition program, Laura, they're on your campus.
Correct.
So they're living in other homes? Is that how it's set up?
It looks like a duplex.
Okay.
6 men on one side, 6 women on another side.
So we've got the active kind of treatment program, 60 to 90 days. Am I hearing that right?
It's 90 days.
Okay, 90 days. And then the optional 120 days afterward.
That is correct. 7 months total.
And so what capacity do you have in that transitional program?
Currently, again, we hold 6 men and 6 women. Now, keep in mind that the only ones that we take currently are the ones that have completed our residential treatment.
Right, right.
So if you have 6 that completed residential treatment and 3 of them come to us, we might have some give. Currently, we have 8 in our transitional living. So within 5 months, we have 8. And we have had multiple already graduate from our transitional program.
That's excellent. And I know about your philosophy you've shared with us. I'm imagining with the kind of intensive treatment, the culturally appropriate treatment, you have a lot of folks who are giving back as far as participating in delivering the program, being support for other people going through it. Tell us a little bit about that part of the program.
We absolutely do. There's no better feeling than knowing the bond that has, you know, been built since they've been there. One of the things that has been really recognized by us is in addiction often, families dissipate.
Mm.
There's some bad feelings. There's some actions that weren't well taken. And so a lot of our clients, they want their roots. They want that culture back. They want to feel like they belong. And so we have had multiple clients that have graduated since we opened, come back, drive hours to come back to see another client that they were in there with graduate.
That's great. That's great. Folks who are listening today, they're saying, okay, I'm in the Northeast, or I'm in the Southwest. Oklahoma, yeah, it's centrally located, but it's really far from us. Do you have a lot of folks who are coming from all over the country, because you're making your services available to any First Nation person, right?
That is correct. We have had clients come as far as Canada, California,
wow.
Nebraska, Colorado, Arkansas, and multiple areas in the state. And so to elaborate on that a little bit, mm-hmm. they provide their own transportation to okay. us. However, the criteria that we have upon acceptance is that they can only test positive for THC if it's anything else that they have to go to a detox. Mm. So once they get to our campus and they get those drug screens completed, if they need detox, we ourselves transport them to detox.
Okay.
Then we will pick them up from detox. It's about 25 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
We will pick them up from detox and they will come straight to our program. So once they get to us, they are in good hands with us. We take care of them. Yes, sir.
Excellent. Excellent. So someone wants to reach out to you. They say, hey, we want to learn more about what the Osage Nation is doing. They're getting excited based on what you're sharing, Laura. How do they contact you or contact your team?
So my office number is 918-287-9339. However, again, I would say that our main number would be the point of contact for the primary residential treatment to get in contact with Lyric. And that number is 539-212-2499.
Okay, you got to help me out here. I want to make sure we get this. Let's go with that number for Lyric, because I think a lot of folks, if they're going to come from a distance, that's what they're looking for,
absolutely.
Right? The residential program.
Yes.
No, that's not a 918 area code.
It is not. Well, it is an Oklahoma area code, but it's not a 918 area
okay,
code.
So that's a 539?
Correct.
Okay, so 539, and then what comes after that?
212-2499.
Okay, let me make sure I got this right, just so everyone gets it who's listening. 539 area code, 212-2499.
That's correct. Now that will go straight to our front desk receptionist. And then at that time, if we have a client that's calling that wants to get into their program, it's extremely simple. They say, I'm a male, I'm a female. They can give their name. I want to get into your residential treatment program. They will immediately be transferred to a case manager for a phone screening.
Okay.
So there's not a wait. There's not a long wait. They staff every Wednesday. So less than a week before there's a yes, we'll accept you, no, you, we won't. And at that time, they'll get a call saying, hey, when can you come in?
One of the biggest difficulties, of course, with addiction treatment is people just being willing to admit they have a problem and reach out. So we can be sure. We have a diverse audience, not just Native folks, but folks across the demographic lines. There's many people listening to this show that are dealing with substance use issues. And a lot of them are going to say, oh, this sounds really good, but they're not going to pick up the phone. Why should someone second guess that decision? Why should they actually call you or your team?
I think that we, again, as I mentioned earlier, we have a large amount of peer recovery support specialists.
Mm.
And again, they are that glue. And that glue is, we have those PRSSs in every aspect, in transitional, in outpatient, in PRT. Our transitional supervisor is a PRSS. Nobody knows that. He's also the coordinator of the sweat lodge. Mm. So we have staff all the way around that are imperative and know exactly what it takes and how hard that first step is.
Wonderful. Laura, thank you for joining us. What I'm hearing you say is if anybody is tuning in today and they need help, don't hesitate to call 539-212-2499. Have I got it right?
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
I know a lot's happening here. You were gracious to pull away from your booth. Thanks so much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to step away just briefly. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got another great guest waiting in the wings to join us on today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Don't go away. You don't want to miss our next guest right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at aianl.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, aianl.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA service center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're continuing a series of exciting interviews that I'm doing. I've got this great privilege of meeting with people from all over Indian country who are doing amazing things, and we are so thankful for so many that are willing to share with our listening audience. No exception is the person across from me, Chesley Keen. Dr. Chesley Keen, it's so great to have you with us today.
Thank you.
A lot of people know you. You've made a big impact in Indian country over the years. For those who've not interacted with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Definitely. Yes. Hello. I'm Chesley Keen. I'm Dene from the Navajo Nation, Deer Springs Clan, Bipatoni, born for the Irish, Ashiche Wazuni Edgewater, and I serve as Vice President of Research, Evaluation, and Strategic Planning at Kaufman & Associates Incorporated. And I am based in Flagstaff, Arizona. Very, very happy to be here.
Kaufman & Associates. I've been in many settings throughout Indian country, a lot of scientific meetings, things, American Public Health Association, National Indian Health Board, like the sponsors of this fine conference, and Kaufman & Associates. You guys are well known throughout Indian country, but I think there's still a lot of people who say, yeah, I've heard of those people, but what do they do? Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Absolutely, yes. And actually, so we have a booth here at NIHB, and we've heard this a lot. I've heard of you. I've seen your work. I've seen a report with your logo on it. And so Kaufman & Associates Incorporated is a woman and Native-owned company. We're a management consulting firm and founded in 1990, so been around for 35 years.
Wow.
Serving Indian country. Yes, and our through line is actually Native health. And so the company was founded on Native health, Indigenous health principles,
And so over the years, we have expanded our services. So largely, we now have our primary service lines of communications, meeting event planning, research evaluation and planning, and behavioral health transformation. And so we do a lot of unique work. But as I noted, need of health is a priority. And so a lot of our work is centered on making sure people understand that health is more than hospitals and clinics. Services, it's policy, it's systems. And so we really work to help need of communities demonstrate, right? They have solutions to the native health issues that they have. And so our work, whether it's communication strategy or behavioral health transformation, technical assistance, or the work my team does, we're just trying to make sure that the historical knowledge and skills and expertise of the community are demonstrated in the work, and that communities are actually getting results that they can use.
Mm. Chesley, tell us some stories. I mean, people say, okay, this doctor knows a lot about what she's talking about. It sounds clear, but what does it look like? I mean, how does my tribe interface with Kaufman and Associates? What could you do for us? Can you give us some examples?
Definitely. So we do work with federal, state, tribal communities. We do federal and state contracting. And so some of the work we've done has centered on suicide prevention, cancer screening, opioid response. And some of the work that we've done has been centered on community health needs assessments or supporting evaluations of programs. And I like to tell people that a lot of times people come to us, they tell us, we know what we're doing, especially the cultural grounding is working. We're just not sure how to measure it. We're not sure how to translate it either for our funding mechanism, or we're not sure how to demonstrate the evidence in a way that is meaningful to our community, our tribal leaders, and the funding mechanism. And so one tribe we worked with really wanted to implement a maternal child health program, home visiting program. And so we are guided by Indigenous evaluation principles, people of a place, that data belongs to the tribes and the people of the tribe. And so they were a little restricted by the framework of the grant that they received. And so we needed to help them understand you can still indigenize the process, and we can help you locate approved indigenous frameworks and home visiting programs, infant health programs that already exist that can be tailored to the unique needs of your community. And so that's one that was really fun because we got to kind of help them with the grant process, apply for the grant, get the grant, and then implement all of the different stages. And right now they are in the implementation stage. And it's amazing to see the community members eager to be part of the home visiting program, eager to tell the stories of how they feel seen and safe, sharing stories of how home visiting in the past has felt unsafe or like an intrusion. You know, that's one of the first stories that comes to mind.
I love it. So if I'm hearing you right, there's grants that are available for all kinds of things. And in this case, this particular tribe said, we have a vision for what home care looks like based on our tribal cultural values. And we're looking at this call for proposals, and it doesn't really sound like it aligns all that much with what we want to do. And somebody like your team comes and says, hey, we can help you package what you want to do in a framework that meets the needs of this funding organization. Am I hearing that correctly?
Absolutely, yes.
And so not only did you package that, but they got the grant, they're implementing it, and they're excited because they're seeing results now that you're actually helping them measure tangible outcomes from that intervention.
Yeah.
This is exciting stuff.
It is. Yes, and it's lovely.
Now, I have some research background, too. So we get excited about maybe some things that not everyone else gets excited about, right? Someone says, well, we know this is working, but we get excited when we can actually quantitate, where we can measure that it's having an impact. Tell us some other stories.
I love the work that we do. And so my responsibility is to oversee my teams and the work that they do, and to make sure that community is represented in what we do. And so some of the work that we've been doing recently is strategic planning. We've really been growing out the strategic planning line of our service line. And I've been very proud of how the team has worked to make sure all voices are heard. And so as researchers, we often do say, like, we need a representative sample. But what does that actually look like in each community? So we want to make sure that we hear the youth, that we hear the elders. We hear the professionals, the people most invested in and impacted by the research. And that is different for every community that we work with. And so I think looking at what we've been doing recently, I do feel like some of the strategic plans have been very exciting because we are helping map out work from 1 to 5 year plans. We're working with the tribal leaders, the community members, and some of them, we have had really great partnerships where the tribes offer creative information to help capture the voices. And so if we're doing a strategic plan for a tribal organization, we're not just focused on who's there now. Who has left the organization? Who has matured through the organization and moved on? And making sure that we capture the true representation of the community voices. And so one of our strategic plans, it evolved over time, and we worked with the tribe to develop the pillars of values. And it was particularly beautiful because they wanted to include their tribal language, their native language throughout. And so the pillars were named within their language and they were spoken about in the language. In that way, the community members truly understood what it meant. And so as researchers, tribal relations specialists, and facilitators not part of that tribe, we don't connect as deeply to what it means, but we can help make the framework. We can help the map. And to me, that is the most important thing, is that it means the most to the people who are going to implement it, who are going to live by it, who are going to monitor the progress and success of it. And so I think stuff like that gets me very excited. And as a researcher, I think it's most interesting when we have the opportunity to think about, are we asking the information in a way that this community will understand it? And then if we give the data back to them, how do they understand it? And what does it actually mean for their lives? What does it mean to transform health in any way? What does it mean to secure funding? So for me, that's the best part of it all.
Now, folks have been listening to us. They finally say, I think I understand a little bit more about Kaufman and Associates, but I'd like to learn even more. How does someone get a hold of a member of your team?
Beautiful. So people can find us at kaufmaninc.com. I can be reached at chesley.keen@kaufmaninc.com. We also have an information email, info@kaufmaninc.com. And so that is a great way. And I have really enjoyed my time here because I have helped some people with methodological questions. I've helped people think about their surveys. We've had some people who have shared that they needed to report through resources like BRFIS. And so thinking about how do we add questions that actually capture the context. And so it's been a lot of fun to talk with people about that.
I so appreciate your enthusiasm. Trying to write this email down, but Kaufman is not easy to spell.
No.
So spell out Kaufman Inc., right? KaufmanInc.com is what I'm looking at.
Yes.
But spell it out for us, please.
KaufmanInc.com.
Okay. Tell me if I got it right. KaufmanInc.com.
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking forward to checking more out on your website.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Keen.
Yes, ahiyahat. And I look forward to hearing more from your great radio station.
We do have to step away just briefly. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're going to be back with more on today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Don't go away. A lot more coming up.
American Indian and Alaska Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. We're glad you're joining us for the second half of today's broadcast. I've got another fantastic guest in the studio with me. Our virtual studio, sitting across from me, is Christina Martell. Christina, it is so wonderful to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. D. Rose. And now that I know, I can call you Dr. David, maybe.
Yes, you even call me David. And I know you've been gracious allowing me to call you Christine. You're a person with a lot of responsibility. You're someone who is known throughout Indian country and beyond. Tell us a little bit about all that you do.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm actually celebrating 25 years at the American Cancer Society.
Amazing.
25 years.
Amazing.
And I'm going to be sharing that all year long because I'm so proud of the work that I've been able to accomplish together with so many people in the community and across the nation. So I am Strategic Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for the American Cancer Society's West Region. And the West Region includes Arizona, California, Hawaii, and Guam.
Okay. Well, that is exciting. We've had the privilege of working with folks throughout that region. My wife and I had a chance to do a variety of programs in Guam, so I had a chance to see some of the work that ACS and others are doing to make an impact as far as changing lives, early diagnosis, treatment. You guys, though, stole the show here early at the National Indian Health Board's National Tribal Health Conference. I mean, that's just my vantage point, but we were here for the pre-conference meetings on Monday, and we said, we've got to check this out. The American Cancer Society is showing a film called Real Lives. Tell us about that.
Thank you so much, David. We were so honored to be part of the opening, I want to say the opening ceremony, really, here with the National Indian Health Board's conference. And we are a sponsor of the American Cancer Society and American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, which is our legislative branch, sister organization. They fight for the rights of cancer patients and their families, the things that we can't do in terms of policy. So we were so grateful to have the opportunity to share real lives cancer stories of Indigenous people, which is a project I've been working on since 2022.
Wow. It was both touching and sobering. And I think one of the things that a lot of us walked away with is something that we've heard. I mean, we've seen data coming out about disparities when it comes to cancer outcomes, especially among Indigenous peoples. And we heard some of these really tragic stories with access to care and other things. Tell us what you've been hearing from people who've been impacted by this film?
Thank you so much for the question, David. Well, I will tell you this. I have been involved, as I shared, with this project. I was in marketing communications at the time in 2022, and then I moved into this role soon after. And I had the great privilege of working with my teammates across the American Cancer Society in marketing. And I literally got a phone call from my counterpart in Illinois. And James Haynes is his name. I'm a name dropper because I want to give credit where credit is due.
Okay, fair enough.
And he is the director of communications in our North region. And so James said, Christina, we need to tell these stories, the stories of Indigenous people. There was a report that just came out at the time that Alaska Native people had the highest rate of colorectal cancer in the world. It was a 50-year study. That just came out. So we need to go to Alaska.
This is tragic. I mean, for those of us in the medical community, if you talk about preventable cancers, I mean, colon cancer is right at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
So if people are having those adequate screenings. And I'll just tell you, as a physician, the place that American Cancer Society has in my mind, even as a kid, I mean, I remember seeing graphics where you guys were talking about early cancer warning signs and early detection. Tell us about why that's so important to your organization.
It is important to us because we really want to meet people where they're at. It's not about the American Cancer Society saying, get screened, talk to a doctor about screening. We're stepping back and listening and showing up where people are at. And that's what this film is about. And give voices to the caregivers, give voices to the survivors, and give voices to those who are no longer with us. How do we do that? We do that in sharing community and sharing and holding space for one another. In Hawaii, my aunties in Hawaii, and I'm so grateful that they have brought me into their family from Hawaii to Alaska. And the aunties in the film, as you may remember, they told me, it's not how much you know, it's how much you care. And that's what it comes down to. Doesn't matter what those diplomas say on the wall, it's how much you care. And Indigenous Native people must continue to stand strong for themselves, for their community, for the next generation, and honoring those before us. And that is part of Indigenous knowledge. Yes?
Definitely.
And I want to share, if it's okay with you, Dr. David. No, I'm calling you Dr. David. That's just what's feeling well.
That's good. That works. That's perfect.
This film started in 2022 with that first phone call to go to Alaska, go to Hawaii, tell the stories of the Indigenous people of Alaska because of the access to care. And when we say access to care, that also means screening.
True.
That also means talking to a physician, talking to a nurse, talking to someone and say, have you talked to anyone about any of these screenings? What are the risks? What is your family history? Right.
These are such important questions. And like I mentioned, so many moving stories. Now, we had the privilege of watching the film, the Real Lives film. Is this something that's available on the internet? Can tribes screen it at a community center? I mean, how do people access this amazing project?
Well, yes, it is. It's available. It's available on YouTube.
Okay.
We want to share it out, but we want to share it out with purpose. And it does take funding to continue this work. And so that takes me back to the journey within this documentary, was that from that first phone call and when I went to Alaska. And I went to Alaska, and in fact, it was this month.
Okay.
In September. It was my birthday month. So I spent my birthday in Alaska.
Wow.
With the Inuit people that welcomed me in, and they shared their stories. And these are leaders as well in the community. And board members, new board members. We were forming a new board up in Anchorage. And then that took me to Hawaii 2 weeks later. And I sat and talked story with the aunties. And learn so much of the aloha, the essence of who we are as people, right? And it comes down to the same story, access to care, whether you're in the Alaskan tundra, 3-4 flights to Anchorage, that may take days. Right?
Especially when you get those weather delays up
there. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's intense.
And it is then the same in Hawaii, if you're on the island of Hawaii, mm-hmm. known as the Big Island, mm-hmm. the city, the town of Hilo, has a very high rate of cancer as well. And the reason for that is access to care.
Mm.
There's not a hospital on the Big Island. There are small clinics. There's not an oncology center, though there is, but there are no oncologists.
Now, I did not realize that.
Doctors fly in, and then they fly out.
Wow.
And indigenous people of Hawaii are not normally going to get on a plane and fly to Oahu, mm-hmm. to Queens Hospital, where we do have a Hope Lodge, and we do talk about Hope Lodge in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Hope Lodge is a home away from home where the American Cancer Society provides a free home away from home for cancer patients and a caregiver.
That was beautiful.
Yes.
Is that the only Hope Lodge? Is that a unique project?
There are multiple Hope Lodges across the country, from Hawaii to New York City.
Okay. Yes. Thanks for clarifying that.
And thank you. And thank you for asking the question.
So we know that the Real Lives film is available. It's out there on YouTube. American Cancer Society has produced the film. But the stars of the film are the indigenous people who tell their stories. Some of them, some tragic stories about loved ones who passed away, but also stories of survival and people that said, no matter what challenges we're facing, we're going to press forward. To me, one of the things that really spoke to me about the film was just this sense of empowerment. A lot of times people can feel if they're not part of a majority population, they are disenfranchised, they don't have opportunities. And just to hear the stories of First Nation people saying that, you know what? Yeah, we had these obstacles. We had to do all this traveling. It was difficult. But to see these survivors sharing their story, I think, was very powerful.
And that is the reason why I want to continue to tell these stories. Because of that reason, that cancer does not always mean that you're not going to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
Because American Cancer Society is here. But we will also need to empower those in the community that look like those in the community, that understand the culture of those in the community, speak the language of those in the community. We can only do this together. And I want to drop another name, the Chickasaw Nation. They saved this film. They saved this film. It was at an event that we had last year. We only had clips of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And the team was trying to get to a point where, how are we going to tell these stories from Alaska to Hawaii to Oregon to Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma mm-hmm. City to Arizona, Illinois? How are we going to tie this all together? And so Chickasaw Nation stepped up. They asked what we needed and said, finish this documentary. These voices must be heard. And so we jumped on it. So thank you very much to the team. And we moved forward and we completed it. And that's where Dr. Daryl Joseph, mm-hmm. who's an ACS-funded researcher from NAU, Northern Arizona University, and we asked Dr. Joseph, would you be our narrator? Would you tie these all together? Mm-hmm. Would you tie these stories together? He said yes.
Oh, he did a great job.
And literally, I will tell you this, Dr. David, we wrapped his story, his part, in April of this year.
Wow.
And we had the premiere at First American, and thanks to Chickasaw Nation and Cherokee, they invited us to have a premiere at the First American Museum in Oklahoma City on May 8th. And we wrapped in April. And production.
Yeah, that's a short timeline, very short timeline.
Yes. And we invited Dr. Joseph to the premiere, and we had the opportunity to also invite Sarah Scanlon, who is from Alaska, to represent her tribe. And so it was such a beautiful experience where it was a culmination. And so then that brought us here today.
I mean, it's an amazing story of how you pulled that together. So many great people that you drew from. The other thing I'll just tell you from a production standpoint that some people may not appreciate, but I loved how you kept the lower thirds up, identifying who is speaking. So many times you watch a documentary, you'll see a name flash up and then you're wondering, who is that person? And yeah, I saw their name before, but who are they? I thought you did a great job with keeping people's names out there. So, hey, I could connect with this person. I mean, this is a person that I could reach out to. So I love that you did that part, just connecting people. I think you do such a tremendous job with that, and I really value that.
Thank you very much. I'm a strong believer in that representation matters, but that connection is everything. And that's what this film does. Mm-hmm. It connects all the stories, and then those viewing it or listening to it will then connect. And doesn't matter where you're at, doesn't matter where you live, you connect.
Unfortunately, the clock always wins, Christine. Okay, we've got to step away for a break. Before we do that, someone wants to reach out to you, your team, they want to connect with the American Cancer Society. How do they do it?
They call the 1-800 number, 1-800-227-2345, or go to cancer.org. I would go to cancer.org first. It's in multiple languages.
Christina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. I'm Dr. DeRose. We've got more coming up in our final segment of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. DeRose. Stay by.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness, and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse, and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
So welcome back to our final segment of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Sitting across from me still, fortunately, we're able to keep by, maybe I should say graciously, Christina Martell was willing to stay by for our final segment. Christina, I so appreciate you staying by. I know a lot's happening here at the National Tribal Health Conference in Phoenix, Arizona. A lot of people clamoring for your attention. And I saw that here in just the short time we've been together. So thank you so much for staying by for one more segment.
Thank you so much, Dr. David. I am so grateful for the extra time. I wanted to just give Dr. Daryl Joseph so much love. I am so grateful. The team is grateful to Dr. Daryl Joseph. And he has showed me the Hopi way. And the Hopi way is, like most indigenous communities, is that it is all about indigenous knowledge and how we connect. We talked about that earlier.
Right.
And so with American Cancer Society and what we are doing is really stepping back and listening to what that is and then putting that into action together with indigenous community leaders like here today. Right? The National Indian Health Board is doing just that, bringing us all together, networking.
I love many of Dr. Joseph's messages, and We're hoping to get Dr. Joseph on a future show. I know he was here for the screening of the film, but then he had to slip away, and we're hoping to get him on a future show. But I didn't realize what a talented musician he was.
He's an incredible musician, and it just comes, he says, every song that he plays with his brothers, and his brothers meaning the flute, is wooden flutes, every song is unique. It just comes to him. And he had shared with me, he said, Christina, I wish I had brought my brothers today to open up the screening. And he almost turned back halfway to get his brothers. But I said, keep going forward because your brothers are always with us and you can make music the next time.
One of the things to me, I was really inspired by Dr. Joseph's holistic approach, you know, really that grounding in his own indigenous roots, but trying to really share that perspective with the audience. I thought he did an amazing job. You have actually collaborated with Dr. Joseph as far as research out of Northern Arizona University. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And we were so honored to have his partners there, some of his principal researchers, and the American Cancer Society is funding research at Northern Arizona University and at the University of Arizona. And that is how I connected with Dr. Joseph actually about a year and a half ago. He was a guest on an American Cancer Society virtual conversation during Indigenous Peoples Month. And I said, I need to get to know this person, know more about the research that he's doing. And I'll share just a bit of it. And
please,
what he is researching is really about cervical cancer in Indigenous women with disabilities.
Wow.
So it is very layered, very specific. So we connected and talked about his research, and then that led to this incredible opportunity with Real Lives, Cancer Stories of Indigenous People documentary.
You know, we've touched on, for me as a clinician, two of the saddest scenarios with cancer. You know, one is all of those cancers that are so easily treatable if diagnosed early. You know, the cervical cancer with the pap smears and, you know, now some of the more advanced testing. The colorectal cancer with screening. But the other thing that you touched on, Christina, that really spoke to me is this fear of cancer. And I think one of the tragedies that a lot of us clinicians have seen, we've seen those patients come in. I remember early in my career, an elder comes in and I can't even communicate with him. He's comatose. And I start talking with the family and they say, oh, well, he's been bleeding for months, but he didn't want to come into the hospital because he was afraid it was cancer. He was afraid if it was cancer and he came to the hospital, he would die. And he waited so long that when he came to the hospital with that advanced cancer, of course, what happened? He died. And so it's these sad, self-fulfilling prophecies. I really see you at the American Cancer Society trying to end some of these tragic narratives. Am I hearing part of what your mission entails?
That's part of it, really, and to really lean in to culture. I could also speak about other Indigenous cultures, the Latino Indigenous culture, and the word cancer is, people don't like to even say it out loud because then they may get it. So dispelling some of those myths, but we don't want to go into communities to say, well, you need to get screened to save your life. No, that is not what the American Cancer Society is about. What we are about is empowering those that represent the community to talk about cancer. And what does it mean to talk to a doctor about getting a mammogram? It is so layered. What does it mean to talk to a doctor about getting a pap smear? I had a conversation today with a woman who said that her mother died because she never had a pap smear. She died of cervical cancer. How is that possible? And she never had a pap smear. And so then we have to have that conversation about what does it mean to have the voice of a community like the Indigenous community, Native American community. What does that mean? That means that there's someone from that community that can say, I went through that. I went through that experience. There was a woman up in Alaska. Her husband had stomach pain for months. went to the doctor. He was dismissed.
Mm.
Went back to the doctor, dismissed. This happened time and time again until finally they discovered colorectal cancer. He died 1 month, 3 weeks later.
Wow.
And that is a very common story. Another common story, Sarah Scanlon. Sarah lost most of her siblings except two.
Mm.
And she is a survivor, a family of eight. And in fact, I have this story that from this conference, I met her niece, not knowing it was her niece.
Really? She came to the screening?
She came to the screening. Wow. I shared this at the end of the screening, if you remember. Mm-hmm. I met her in the lobby of this hotel that we were having the conference. And she happened to have a shirt that I recognized. And I said, "Where did you come from?" And she's like, "I came from Alaska." And I said, "I know people in Alaska." And I showed her a photo from the filming that I had taken. She said, "That's my aunt." I said, "How about this person? That's my cousin."
Wow.
My first cousin. And so we are on sacred land here. And I believe strongly that it is important to give voice.
Well, I so appreciate, I know so many appreciate what you and your team have done. And I know a lot of people, at least when they hear stories like this, when they hear how people outside of Indian country are saying, "We want to support you, telling your stories, supporting one another." I know American Cancer Society represents everyone, right?
Yes, we do.
But yet I see you saying, "Look, yeah, we represent everyone, but it's not a one-size-fits-all," right?
Because cancer affects everyone, but it does not impact everyone equally.
Mm-hmm.
And the work that I do is equity.
Mm.
And we're not there yet when it comes to the Indigenous community. In equitable access to care.
It's true.
In health justice. We're not there. But the American Cancer Society cannot do it alone. But we are underscoring the need. We know the disparities. We have the numbers. And some of the numbers are missing.
It's true.
But the numbers that we do have, like those, the colorectal cancer numbers in Alaska, right? We know those numbers. So how do we work with the people of Alaska? How do we work with like the National Indian Health Board and its contemporaries, right? Because we need to move forward together. And that is the thing. And it is so important to really underscore the need. And I'm going to say these last words.
Sure, sure, please.
We must stand strong, stand together as Indigenous people for ourselves, for our community, and for the next generation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Folks want to contact you. They want to contact American Cancer Society. They want to find ways to partner. Tell us again how people can engage with you.
People can engage with me personally. I will give my information out freely.
That is gracious.
And I'm so grateful for this time with you, Dr. David. And my email is my first name, Christina, K-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, my last name, martell@cancer.org. And people can find me at cancer.org as well.
Let me make sure I've got that right. So Christina is spelled with a K.
Yes.
K-R-I-S-T-I-N-A.
Yes.
Dot Martell, M-A-R-T-E-L, at cancer.org.
That's it.
You've made it easy for us to track you down.
Short of my cell number.
But
I would give that just to make sure that people want to talk about real lives and how we can continue to fund opportunities to reach the Indigenous community.
Christina, you've been very gracious. Thanks for sharing your time, your enthusiasm. Thanks for all that you and the team at ACS are doing. Thanks for pulling away.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. David DeRose. That was Christina Martell with the American Cancer Society. We're winding up today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Thank you for joining us. And as always, I'm Dr. DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.